You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome to episode number 22 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. It is late May 2012. We broadcast, of course, on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as on the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes are also available on our own Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/SWBeyondFilms, which, incidentally, is also our name on Twitter. But enough about how you got here and how you can find us. Let's get the show started. I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler. With me, of course, as always, my stalwart companion, as I always say, Mark Herleman.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Happy to be here. Excited, as always. Hey, you're right, Whistler. We're not alone today. We also have with us once again Kelly Adams, the writer for Big Shiny Robot herself, is here with us to discuss some fun stuff.
Hi.
That's right, folks. This time we are dealing with one of those somewhat controversial topics again. We will be this time and next time, both revolving around bringing in a female gender perspective into a conversation that otherwise would be dominated by male perspectives. Here we want to try to make it a little more broad. You're welcome, Andrew Gilbertson out there. Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we, of course, ask the tough questions, the ones that have bothered you for a long time, bothered us for a long time, sometimes just simple ones that are good for discussion. You ponder about Star Wars, and, of course, so do we. This episode, we're dealing with the issue of parenting in the Star Wars saga, both film and EU. I guess just to start us around the table, Kelly, what's your general impression of Star Wars in the realm of parenting? I mean, are we talking about something where they present a good set of role models to follow, bad role models, parenting in the EU just in general? What do you think?
It's horrible. It's absolutely terrible. I don't even know what to say about all that, because, you know, all the EU books I've read, and even the movies, if you look at the parenting skills of the characters, they're just terrible. I think... Now, I'm not even going to get into details. We're not getting into that yet. But it's when you look at most of these kids and see how they grow up, or if they even live to adulthood, it's just pretty bad all around.
Okay, Mark?
I have to agree. It is a harsh environment, that galaxy far, far away. And as we've seen with the Solo children alone, I mean, it's definitely a 1 out of 3 odds.
This is true. I think I've got to go along and agree with you all. There are a few examples of situations where it seems like the kids are doing okay, that the parenting was decent enough, but it's very much the valedictorian of summer school situation, where they're the best of a bad lot, but not what we would necessarily think of as positive parenting, at least in a lot of these cases. I grew up with sort of the dichotomy going on of during the day, or during the later in the evening time, I'd perhaps be sitting around just kind of chilling with my family, and we'd be watching, among other things, Married with Children. Al Bundy, Peg Bundy, Bud and Kelly. And then, of course, when I was really young, I'd be going to sleep. I had this old black and white TV, not because I'm that old, just because that's just, you know, what we got that was cheap to stick in my room as a kid. But I'd be watching Nick at Night to go to sleep. And I'd be seeing things like The Donna Reed Show. And those two are about as far opposite as you can get. Married with Children, Donna Reed. It seems like Star Wars is much more toward the Married with Children side than the Donna Reed side. Not in terms of the crudeness, but certainly in terms of the parenting. The fact that anybody turns out normal in the Star Wars universe, at least among our primary characters, boggles my mind, I've got to say.
If you're going to talk about turning out normal, then I would have to, as far as television families go, I would have to mention the Addams Family, because, I don't know, some of the characters in the Star Wars universe actually resemble more the Addams Family than any other TV show characters.
Ooh, good point.
Chewbacca and It, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That is exactly. Now,
we're going to be touching on some subjects here that you probably haven't read about, so consider this your spoiler warning. We're going to start touching on the families here and kind of giving you a little backstory and then just kind of explore them.
Let's start, I guess, with the Skywalkers. I mean, the Skywalker family, they're the predominant family in the EU and within the films themselves. And we've got a great multi-generational group here to take a look at, if we're also going to wrap in the Solos, thanks to Luke and Leia going off in sort of the separate directions and giving us two family lines from there on. So I guess just starting with the Skywalkers, whether we're talking about Shmi Skywalker with Anakin, Anakin and Padme with, well, sort of with Luke and Leia, not that they're ever there. and then, of course, with Leia going off with Han, with Jason, Jaina, Anakin, and now Alana, their grandchild that they're essentially raising as their child. And, of course, we have Luke with Mara, with Ben, going all the way to, again, eventually Morrigan Cord and Cole Skywalker with Cade Skywalker, with, of course, Nat Bantha Rock Skywalker in there as well, with his wife, I believe it was Drew, and then their children as well. So lots of generations within the Skywalkers. What lessons in parenting can the Skywalkers give us, and how do they fare as far as parenting goes?
I think the first and foremost thing you need to do to be an actual, you know, good parent is to live in order to raise your children, which brings me to Padme and the fact that she had no will to live. I mean, she worried about these children, or she didn't even know she had twins, which, I don't know, it's always bothered me with the technology they had back, or, you know, in the galaxy far, far away. But she had endured all this with Anakin turning into Darth Vader and everything else, and having these children, start of a new era, hope, possibility. And with all her strength and character that she had in the earlier films, she just lets herself die on a table. And knowing that these children were going to grow up, I don't know if she knew who they were going to grow up with. I mean, her family, her parents didn't know that the children lived beyond her death, so they weren't there to take care of them. I mean, it has always boggled my mind that she would just willingly sacrifice her life and just hope with a spin of the wheel that these children would actually end up with decent human beings or aliens, species, whatever.
Yeah, the surrogate aliens. Yeah. You know, I didn't even think about Shmi. You know, she is the typical single mother, and she raised Anakin all by herself up to the point where she hands him off to the Jedi and gets her freedom from children, or married with children aspect. But you know, you're right. When it comes to Padme, that is one of those things. Like, well, maybe if they'd have told her she was having twins, she'd have cared a little more. But but you always wonder, like, well, did her family even know? I mean, there's that side of their relationship, and by there I mean Padme and Anakin, where they kept everything so secretive that no one else was able to enjoy their family at all. And I just think, you know, where would it have gone had Anakin not gone to the dark side? I mean, my typical reaction there is that he would have left the order, but I don't know. There's a part of me that sees him being fickle enough to try to stay in there and keep it a secret. And I don't know if that's any way you want to be raising a family.
Well, to pick up where you started there with Shmi, I think Shmi is probably one of our good examples of a parent here. Yes, she lets Anakin go off with Qui-Gon. Who lets their little 9-year-old kid go off with a strange hippie man they just met to go off and become a mystic or whatever and live on the Jedi commune? But she at least was saying, though, you know, I have a chance here finally to give him a better life. I'm willing to sacrifice my time with my child to give him a better life. In a sense, the way of a parent maybe sending a child to a private school, to a boarding school, to whatever, if that's the best chance at a good education. So I can sort of see that. Yeah, the whole there was no father thing should have raised a lot of red flags for her. But at the same time, I mean, once the kid is born, you can either spend time worried about that, or you can spend time raising the child. And it seems like she definitely took the time to raise Anakin instead of fretting over that whole issue. So, you know, I mean, you can make the argument of whether or not she made the right choices along the way, but she seemed like she was a good mother. And in fact, the positive feelings that we get out of Owen Lars, who of course grows up to be curmudgeonly, towards his stepmother kind of, I think, bode well in the sense that this is a family that is essentially, it's not a broken family because there was no father to start with. But then when she becomes a stepmother, then that situation seems like she was in a relatively positive situation. She was, maybe she wasn't a truly motherly figure to the essentially getting to be adult Owen, but at least she was loved within the family. It seems like that's a very positive dynamic. But then you take Anakin, and he's the one that starts going off in the crazy way. I'll agree with Kelly on the whole lost the will to live thing. We have mocked this mercilessly on Republic Forces Radio Network constantly because it's just so utterly ridiculous. It's supposed to be something that is mythological and ties into all these archetypes and Greek tragedy and stuff like that. But really, it's more just a, wow, you just had two kids and now you don't give a crap about life. Wow, that shows how much you care about these kids. In her sense, I've always kind of hoped, and this is something the EU played into a little bit with Last of the Jedi, Last of the Jedi and Coruscant Knights, continuity issues notwithstanding. They have played around with the idea of the Anakin's force choke being the main cause of death, but the fact that she doesn't fight to live, if it is a lost the will to live thing, as the droids say, because there's certainly a medical way to measure that. Then,
absolutely.
Then, you know, it does kind of strike me as the we're going to talk about sexism in Star Wars in an upcoming episode. And in politics, they talk about character assassination, the idea of tearing somebody down as a way of defeating your opponent. You can also use that phrase character assassination in a much more literal sense of destroying a fictional character in the core of what made them who they are. And I think that Padme got a hefty dose of character assassination in episode 3. All the things that made her a strong female character in 1 and 2, clothing notwithstanding, completely gets shattered in episode 3. And we wind up essentially with Padme, who is ineffectual, barefoot and pregnant, except perhaps with shoes. And by the time we get to the end, here she is essentially giving up on everything. So I would definitely say that Padme, you know, it's the conundrum that's going on right now with the show Once Upon a Time, where you have the adoptive mother and the actual mother of the little boy. You know, their biology does not make you a mother. And in Padme's case, she fails on every possible level. Just because she carried the children and was able to live long enough to give birth to them doesn't mean squat. Padme, Anakin, bad on the parenting side. But I would say that Shmi is a perfectly good example of it.
I'm going to defend Padme for just a minute here. I mean, let's take a moment here and consider the amount of depression she was under. The man she loves, she can't tell anybody about. That right there is depressing. And now you're married. You've been secretly married, and your husband's off fighting a war. That's got to be depressing. And now your husband starts talking crazy talk, and he's all political, like, ooh, we're going to take over the galaxy and rule it. I mean, you know, I could just see that postpartum depression. The moment Luke comes out, her just like, I'm done. I've done the one thing. The baby's going to live. I'm out. I mean, I don't see that actually being the case, but there is a part of me that wants to defend her in that regard. But you, Brent, brought up something about Shmi that made me stop and think, what if we ever got a book where Leia got another diary of Shmi's, where it's right as she's about to have Anakin or right after she had Anakin, and she's contemplating killing the boy. Just like, he's the product of the devil. He's just... I don't know if he's good or evil. Nice. I should end him now. I mean,
What is Aurabesh for 666 after all?
Yeah, I was just thinking about Shmi and, you know, the fact that she and Anakin were slaves and grew up on this, you know, awful desert planet and, you know, controlled by the Hutts, which couldn't have been a happy upbringing. And I was just thinking about that scene at the table in Phantom Menace, where, and I don't remember exactly what Anakin's saying to her, but, you know, talking about, Mom, you say we should try to help people, and you can see the goodness that she instilled in him, and the values, and there's no bitterness in their circumstances. They love each other, they care about each other, they put the welfare of others before them. They're just good hearted people, and I guess, you know, Lucas arranged that to have that stark contrast with what Anakin became. You know, he was such a good, perfect little kid, but I think she did such a good job in spite of everything else going on around them.
It reminds me of the whole thing in Star Wars Legacy, which those who are listening know it's probably my favorite Star Wars comic ever. Cade Skywalker has that phrase that he picked up from his father, who possibly picked it up from his father, who knows, whoever that was. The whole, we take what is given. you know, with the example of Anakin and Shmi, they really took that to heart. It's we take what is given and we make something good out of it, no matter what it is. In Cade's case, it's sort of a we take what is given, but it's almost always said in a begrudging sort of way, like, crap, circumstances suck, but we just got to deal with the hand that we're dealt. Star Wars, in a lot of ways, it seems like to me, it kind of, whether it's EU or otherwise, I've talked before about, I don't know if it was on this show, about how I think a lot of what makes me who I am, the way I look at things like honor, the way I look at the way people should be treated, the way I look at, kind of idealistically at certain things, I think in a lot of ways was shaped by Star Wars when I was younger, with a clear moral lessons. You know, there is good, there is evil. You do have to make a choice. Your actions do determine which side you fall on. It's not just what you say. That the weak can defeat the strong and oppressive as long as they work together. You know, all those types of moral lessons and such. But it seems like no matter what, you know, if we take the classic trilogy, prequel trilogy, whatever, but especially the classics and to a degree the prequels have given us a lot of positive moral lessons to build from. You know, this is a fairy tale for a new age, et cetera, et cetera. But when it comes to family dynamics, that is the one area in which, probably because they just needed to be able to create more conflict, of course, it's more like a what not to do type of listing. It's the, oh, you want to raise people to be honorable? Live like a Jedi. You want to raise someone to know how to treat one another of different races? Look at the way Star Wars and different species tend to work together. You want to learn how to be a parent? Oh, for the love of God, stay away from the Star Wars examples.
Well, you know what? That sort of fits in, though, with that whole fairy tale theme, you know, the classic stories, because so many fairy tales either lack one parent or both. And in the situation where there's perhaps a step parent, I think we all know how well that usually turns out. That's usually the core of a lot of the fairy tales, you know, at least the Disney ones. You know, there's an evil stepmother or, you know, somebody's parent died and you know, where they're growing up an orphan or that kind of thing, because it generates so much conflict, as you said. And it's just, I guess, just a common theme in these kinds of tales.
Let's flip it around then, since we dealt with the Skywalkers that we see within the films here to a degree. I mean, we can't really say anything about Luke or Leia's parenting style in the films because they don't have any kids yet. But let's take this up a generation and look into the EU from the standpoint of Luke and Mara raising Ben, and then Luke raising Ben, and then go into what we've got with the Solos, because, of course, we have the twins initially, Jason and Jaina, then Anakin about a year and a half or so later, and then in theory, we could also include Alana in there. Granted, you know, there's a whole other dynamic there with her and her parents, actually, Tanelka and Jason, but being raised essentially as another child or a foster child in, you know, the way that they presented it to other people, of Leia and Han as well. What do we think about that next generation of Skywalkers and Solos?
I just have to laugh because I think, you know, Mark already mentioned it, but 2/3 of the Solo kids die. Spoiler alert, by the way, but, you know, Han and Leia did such, and I hate to say it because I love them as characters, but they're horrible parents. Reading most of the earlier EU books, they were usually sending their kids off on some remote planet, or the kids were getting kidnapped, or, you know, facing danger at the age of 4, and it just was ridiculous. I mean, I know it generated a lot of, you know, storylines and plots for the various novels, and I guess the kids were easy targets, but and then of course as they got older, they were so conflicted and torn by what is the dark side. I'm the grandchild of Darth Vader, and who am I? And they never really sat down and had talks with their kids. I mean, I guess they were so busy fighting wars and everything else, but you don't really see true parenting, and it's just kind of sad.
There's a lot of it that was just completely flossed over. I mean, we see Leia pregnant with the kids, and then all of a sudden the kids are born, and then bam, they're 2, next thing you know they're 5, oh my gosh, they're 20. It's like, wait, what happened?
I just think back to all the kidnapping plots, and I think that Kelly's hit it right on the nose here. They weren't intentionally putting the kids in harm's way, but it certainly seems as though from a parenting standpoint, Han and Leia, at least for what we see, not necessarily what happens off screen, so to speak, but for what we see, they really weren't there a lot. I mean, it was C-3PO, or it was Winter, or it was Chewbacca, who were, you know, being the nanny-type figures raising the children when Han and Leia were doing other things. I mean, granted, Han, you know, had his New Republic duties that he was doing, or his gallivanting, so to speak, and with Leia, she was chief of state for a giant chunk of time. It was definitely a matter of that professional choice. You know, do you choose the career or do you choose the family? And how do you balance the two? At least with the Solos on that generation, I would say that it tilted so far over to the career side that the parenting got lost in the mix. I'd like to think that there was more happening off screen than we tended to actually see, if we want to put it that way. But certainly it didn't seem like there were a lot of parenting moments. And when we did see Han and Leia with the kids, it was usually because the kids were with them in harm's way, like in, say, the Corellian trilogy or something. It's like, oh no, our kids have been kidnapped. They're aboard that space station. Bastards, blow them to hell. Wait, your kids are still on the station. Oh, blow them to hell gently. I mean, it just kind of felt like, I don't know, it definitely put them more in harm's way. And there's a degree to which I could say that, yeah, it makes sense that the kids would be in harm's way because they are the children of influential individuals. Of course, they're going to be in harm's way, especially when there's a civil war, if you want to call the Empire versus New Republic thing still a continuation of the Civil War. That is going on. But at the same time, you could mitigate that quite a bit more. And it seems like no matter where they sent the children, it didn't necessarily mitigate it. And by sending them away, we now kind of turn around and say, well, yeah, that wasn't very good parenting either. Does sending them away count as keeping them safe and good parenting, or does it count as bad parenting because they're not there for the children? I would think that probably the one thing that would have stood out as good parenting was, hey, just retire, raise the kids, and then go back. But I'm sure we're going to get angry emails going, I'm a woman who works, thank you very much, and I do not want to quit my job to raise my children. So I'm not saying that that should be the case. I'm just saying that it seems like, you know, at least stay on the same stinking planet as your children. That would be a good thing to do. Although, I do think that they are sort of, they've learned their lesson. It doesn't seem like they've really said that much, but as much introspection as there were in Legacy of the Force, and even to a degree in Fate of the Jedi, with Han and Leia looking back at the tragedy of Jason and how he fell and how he died, and even sort of back in the New Jedi Order looking back at what happened to Anakin and him getting in harm's way as a young Jedi, I would say that I think that they seem like they're much better parents, or grandparents in this case, to Alana than they ever were to Jason, Jaina, and Anakin, if only because of proximity. They keep the child with them almost at all times. Of course, that also means that Alana's not with her actual biological mother, and her biological father went Sith and is dead. So from her actual parent standpoint, it's not all that great. But from the standpoint of Han and Leia and their child-rearing abilities, they've gotten significantly better over time now that they've essentially stepped away from the high levels of Galactic Alliance politics.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's where I would think in the real world a parent would step away from their career. I mean, the Solos have proven time over again, it's duty over family. I mean, the kids are in trouble, but nobody's going to bother to take a week off or a month off or a year off and get the kids the heck out of there. You know, I mean, that's one of those things that to me, it's like it's a reverse moral or an anti-moral. You know, you're going to forsake your family's own safety, and the fact that people are trying to kill your kid, that's okay. There's a galaxy that needs saving. I mean, granted, I guess there is an overall saga there and a moral story there as well, but to me it just seems like the parenting needs to have been something that they flossed over, and it's one of those things that fell off between the pages. I mean, they could always go back and flush it in a little more. I know they've done it with a few short stories here and there, but it's one of those things that I always wanted a little bit more when it came to the children growing up, and when with Alana and even Ben, they both grew up so fast that it was like, whoa, you almost didn't have a chance to even enjoy their characters. But these last two 9-book series, Legacy of the Force and Fate of the Jedi especially, really kind of gave you a chance to explore and platform their characters at least. And they did a good job of it. Hopefully we'll see some more of that. But there's a lot of character growth opportunities in these family dynamics that, you know, while we've seen some really good ones with, say, the Solos and dealing with children death, it doesn't quite touch the overall dynamic of a family.
I think that's one of the weaknesses of the EU is that, you know, I guess the powers that be don't think that fans want to see those, you know, I guess more intimate, quieter moments between saving the galaxy from this, you know, brand new threat And, you know, because I've heard a lot of bad things about Tatooine Ghost, which, you know, kind of focused on Leia. And I think that was where, and it's been a while since I've read it, but I think she was kind of thinking about her role as a mother and being a wife and yes. you know, kind of going into that kind of mindset. And I enjoyed that story. I'll have to go back and reread it to refresh my memory on it. But, you know, I've heard a lot of criticism about it because it didn't have the huge wars. And you know, Nathan and I have talked before, I think, about The Courtship of Princess Leia, which actually could have been a really, really good book investigating but focusing on the relationship between Han and Leia and cementing, you know, their relationship and turning it into a marriage. But it turned campy and kind of silly because it's almost like they don't, the authors, publishers, what have you, don't realize that we actually care about these characters regardless of what they're doing. They don't have to be battling with a lightsaber or, you know, fighting a dark lord to actually be interesting if they're well written.
Well, you take the example of Fate of the Jedi with Luke and Ben and Vestara. You know, granted, Vestara is not a member of the Skywalker family. It looked for a while like she could have been, and maybe someday she still will be, you know, if she leaves the One Sith or whatever she decides to do. But, I mean, we have a good dynamic, I think, most of the time with Luke and Ben. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of darker edges to that. Granted, they let Ben kind of go off on his own way, possibly a little too much, going towards Jacen when he was essentially grooming Ben to be his Sith apprentice at some point. But Ben has sort of come around, he's gone through his own troubles, and now he seems like he is, you know, he's kind of the stereotypical teenager in a lot of ways. He won't always agree with Luke, but the two of them have a very good dynamic, especially in Fate of the Jedi. And one of the more interesting conflicts in there, you said how we care about these people as characters and we want to see, you know, the quieter moments. One of the strengths of Fate of the Jedi in a lot of cases was the interaction between Luke and Ben about Vestara. You could sort of feel Ben's excitement about Vestara and how much he was liking her, how much he wanted to trust her, wanted to see her become a Jedi and all this stuff. And at the same time, you really did get a sense of Luke, not out of anger, not out of frustration, not even necessarily out of, say, a prejudice against all things Sith, but out of just concern for his son, trying to make sure that Ben didn't get his hopes up, that Ben didn't wind up getting himself in too deep where he's unable to get back out of the situation. They did a really good job of those quieter moments in Fate of the Jedi than in most books, not because necessarily the other authors couldn't handle it, we just never really get a chance to see it. This time there was actually that undercurrent built in there. So I'd say that with Ben and Luke, we've got another good example here, just like with, you know, Shmi with Anakin early on. I don't know, maybe good parenting skips a generation or something.
Well, Luke and Mara, when they were raising Ben in Legacy of the Force, you know, you see kind of the typical teenage boy and dad conflict kind of build up there. Me and my dad, you know, we're really tight now. We were when I was little, but when I was a teen, we were fighting all the time. And you kind of saw that in the way that Luke and Ben reacted to each other. And then Luke and Mara would talk about how, you know, the parenting was going down. And you kind of got to see, you know, that Luke was kind of bumbling along there for a little while. And it almost took Mara's death for Luke to kind of come back from that. I mean, it really, it at a point there, I really thought Luke's relationship with Ben was significantly damaged. I mean, I got to give props to the writers for really going in Fate of the Jedi and repairing that rift. And you're right, Nathan, they really capitalized on a lot of good moments just between the two of them.
I guess that brings us to the other children out there, most of whom we don't really get a chance to see too much of. We have Sial and Miri Antilles. We have Cad or Cadica, the son of Etienne Termukan and Darman. We have Chance or Lando Jr., the not really ever seen very much child of Lando Calrissian and Tendra Calrissian. And we've got Aelin Vel with, say, the Fett family line. A lot of these we don't tend to get very much detail on, so I think in most of those cases, just kind of a throw up your hands and say, we just don't have enough information, probably. We do, however, have the examples of Valen and Gisela Horn and their parents, Corran and Mirax Horn, and we have the rather odd example of Vestara Kai with her parents, especially Gavar Kai, but Laka as well. So of these non-Skywalker families out there, I know I kind of glossed over a big chunk of them there because it doesn't seem like there's much about them. Where do we see the best examples, worst examples within all these other mainly EU families out there?
I would say it's going to be on the edge of the best. I would say Wedge and Aiella. They, to me, seem to have a lot of, street smarts. You know, I mean, she's a spy. He's a rogue. You can't go wrong there. And both of the girls, they kind of followed in a field. I mean, granted, that is a common theme with all EU parenting. Their kids end up being exactly what they are, typically. And that's what I liked also about Karan and Mirix and their kids. I mean, you know, Karan raised both his kids to be Jedi, even though they weren't telekinetically inclined. And that's one of the things I really enjoyed about Fate of the Jedi. I mean, it put the family in danger. And I will admit that I think was the major clincher for me all the way through the series. I did not relax until the book was over and I was like, the Horn family made it through fine. Because I really thought they were going to write out one of the Horns. I thought either Karan was going to end up dying, something was going to happen, Mirix was going to die, or one of the kids. I was convinced. And they gave you a real good opportunity to get inside Karan's head. I mean, granted, I complained off and on mildly that they didn't do it enough. I'd have liked to have seen more. But at the same time, I think back of New Jedi Order and how long they tortured Han when Chewie died. So, I mean, I think they did a good job there. I would say tragic characters, though, would be Etain and Darman with their son Kataka. I mean, you know, she didn't even have a chance, really, to spend any time with her son. And Darman didn't have a shot in the Carillion Nine Hells. But creepy factor, I would have to give it flat out to the Sith family. I mean, any time the dad is pretty much throwing the daughter at another boy just to kind of further your own cause, it's like, whoa, that is some deep and dark stuff. Along it with, you got Boba. Boba was a really bad dad. I mean, think about it. Boba left his wife and kid. I mean, that's, I don't know which one's worse, Gavar or Boba.
Well, while you were talking, I thought of some other examples, and I wanted to point out one of the more obscure ones, as I was remembering Gariel Capteason. She had a daughter, and I think she's mentioned maybe one other time in the expanded universe. But
Luke, in New Jedi Order, Luke goes and meets up with her.
Right.
I think she had a whole book where she was in it again.
Well, I mean, up until that point where she basically sacrificed herself, I think it was in the Corellian trilogy, or Black Fleet Crisis, I can't remember which one. But up until about the time she sacrificed herself and basically left her kid an orphan, I think she was probably a pretty good parent. And then other examples I wanted to mention were Chewie's family in the holiday special. You know, you get to see his wife and his kid, and he's there with Grandpa. And they're all together, pretty tight-knit and everything. And then his nephew, Lobaka, appeared later on in the Young Jedi Knight series. And I think Wookiees in general are probably really good parents. Much better than any of the humans we've talked about.
That's very true. That's very true. We got to see that. I mean, that's even going back to the holiday special. Granted, the holiday special itself was a train wreck, but it gave us that Wookiee family dynamic that they really haven't messed around with too much. We don't get a lot of dysfunction within Wookiee families, probably because, you know, if you tick off your parents and they disown you, you've got hundreds of years you're going to have to live with being disowned. So yeah, great family dynamics there. I'm not sure about, you know, the Wookiee holographic porn that Itchy was viewing in the holiday special right in front
that
of the child.
That was disturbing.
But that's okay.
And the funny thing is that so many people think that that's exactly what he was watching. That was the first thing that came to my mind.
Oh, totally. It was totally porn.
Yeah. I would never have thought about Melinza Thanos that you mentioned there, Gariel's daughter. But that's another example. But I would say that among these, the ones that really stand out to me, the Horns are a good example of, you know, they try to let the kids find their own way, but at the same time, they are very concerned parents. That was probably the more gut-wrenching aspect of Fate of the Jedi, was seeing what was happening, not so much with Valen and Jacella themselves, but to Corran and Mirax because of what was happening to their children. I gotta say, though, I'm not sure about, Mark, about your characterization of Etain and Darman and their child, Cad, where they didn't seem like they had a chance. Darman had a chance. In Imperial Commando 501st, Darman had a chance to leave and be with his son. And he pulled a Padme nope, sorry, there's something better I gotta do. And he didn't leave. After spending the whole book talking himself in circles about how much he wants to get out of there and having the same freaking conversations character after character after character, where again, that book could have been a short story if they'd just given us the same conversation once instead of 12 times, he finally gets a chance to leave and, nah, man, I can't. I gotta stay and do this from the inside. Great.
Don't worry, Niner, I'm staying with you, man. Clones for life.
Yeah, yeah. Bros before what? Children? Children now? Bros before babies or something like that. That kind of disturbed me at the end of that book. I was like, what a complete moron. I mean, I liked the character before, but he had his moments where you were slapping your forehead like, really? But yeah, by the end of that book, I could not stand the Darman character anymore because he made that decision that I guess he thought was based on honor, which is really, it's the Padme thing. He's lost the will to escape, I guess is the best way to put it for him. I'll go along with the idea, though. I actually found it's hard to pinpoint. With Ghavar and Vestara, you've got this family dynamic that, at one hand, I almost want to say it's better than a lot of the dynamics we wind up seeing with some of the Jedi families, particularly with, in some cases, the way things worked out sometimes with the Solos, but yet at the same time, infinitely worse, because it's a very abusive relationship. At least from our perspective, it's an abusive relationship. From a Sith perspective, the way you teach is through essentially behavioralism. You know, oh, you did something you should not do. Whack! Now don't do it again. Oh, you did it again. Whack! And eventually, they're so afraid of the whack that they won't do it. You know, it's behavioralism, it's legalism from a governmental perspective. You know, scare someone straight. But then again, you know, in being consistent with the same life lessons pretty much straight along, in being consistent with the attention to the child and very clearly defined boundaries between parent and child and whose role is what, there's a little bit more of that on the Lost Tribe of the Sith side than with most of the Jedi characters. You really get a sense that, you know, in his own way, even if it's a sort of a Sith way where it's very covered up, kind of like the old Macho Man type thing, you know, I can't show my feelings before the whole metrosexual thing really started to hit a big craze or anything where it became cool again for men to be able to actually express themselves. You can tell that he cares. He cares about where she's going to wind up going. He cares about what direction she's going in. So, I mean, he's, from a Sith perspective, he was a good father, at least right up there until near, you know, the end of everything where they wind up essentially on opposite sides. So,
well, it's almost like his Sithness got in the way. He was a good dad until being a Sith took precedence, and then it was like, well, you need to go out there and you need to seduce that Jedi because we Sith need to win.
Right, exactly. It's like in those quieter moments, it seemed like he had his chance to actually be very positive, at least in a Sith way with her. So I actually thought that was a pretty good example. I would say there's another one that we haven't mentioned yet that was it's hard to say because we don't see much of it. We see the legacy of it, but not as much of the relationship itself, and that's Boba and Jango. Now, Boba, granted, is not a biological child of Jango. He's a clone of Jango, but he's raised as, depending on which sources you look at, some sources treat it more like a father raising a son. Others treat it much more like Jango raising essentially his legacy of who's going to carry on his bounty hunting traditions and his honor into the future. And I think those two things for guys get mixed together pretty well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, can't they be one and the same?
It seems like it. It seems like depending on which source, it tends to emphasize one or the other. But yeah, I'd say that was actually a fairly positive. He's teaching the boy a trade. Granted, it's, you know, hunting down and killing people. But here, son, let me teach you a trade. It's like, you know, going out and you know, olden days or even now in some places, you know, going out hunting with the parent or whatever, or take your child to work day type of thing. Only in this case is take your child on a bounty hunt type of day. You certainly see the impact the death of Jango has on Boba. So certainly there was a heavy attachment between the two. And, you know, it could be said to be to Jango's credit that for someone who, at least initially in ordering the unaltered clone, seemed to have been looking more about his future legacy, at least the way that is presented in some of the earlier materials around like 2002, 2003, it seems like, you know, saying, okay, this is supposed to be someone that I'm grooming as a tool for the future to carry on from me, but he takes it upon himself to act like a father, not essentially a slave master or a master to an apprentice, but that he does act like a parent to Boba when this isn't a biological child per se, I think, you know, kind of opens up the door to saying that he's, at least in some ways, a good parent. Star Wars opens itself up in a lot of cases to things like foster children, adopted children. So I want to get your thoughts on the Fetts in that generation, but also before we wrap up, because we are getting kind of along here, the step-parents of Luke and Leia, the foster parents, I guess, the adopted parents then of Luke and Leia, the Organas with Leia, but then also Owen and Beru with raising Luke, granted their aunt and uncle, but they are acting as parents in that case. The thoughts on those?
Well, I would say the Mandalorian culture is pretty much a good culture for adopting and fostering, and obviously part of that's where Jango gets his thing. I will say, though, Jango was kind of like the anti-Shmi. I mean, who's Boba's mother? There was no mother. I carried him myself.
Wow.
It's just one of those things where it's like, they did a good job with it, but I mean, in the first one, you've got a child who's born with no dad. The next one, you've got a child who's born with no mother. But there's definitely a legacy aspect to that, and I, you know, because Jango is George's character, not the EU's, I wonder, you know, what the actual background story there was in George's mind. I mean, I know that the EU has given us a different point of view on it, and in that, you know, I could kind of see where Jango wants to carry on the tradition of his faction of Mandalorians. And the best way to do it is to, in this sense, raise himself. He saw the opportunity and he jumped for it. And I think the way Boba was raised is more a testament to the way Mandalorians as a culture were raised and how Jango himself was raised.
And the Mandalorian thing should probably be a future episode. There's so many elements of Mandalorian culture we could talk about. That should be a separate episode sometime in the coming months here.
Ooh, we'll have to pin that down.
What about the adopted families here? We've got, you know, the Organas we don't get to see very much of, but, you know, they, you know, it seems like Bail Organa is a pretty good father. You know, it's aside from the whole we're going to get her involved in the rebellion kind of stuff, but it seems like that's a decision that at least in most respects Leia tended to embrace fully as opposed to it being something that was drilled into her by her parents. We were talking before we started recording about Owen and Beru. Beru, I think, was trying to be a good mother-type figure to Luke. And in his own way, Owen was. Owen was wanting to look out for Luke, wanting to keep Luke safe, but he's such a harsh way of doing it. Like, he lacks the... If he was a doctor, he would lack bedside manner. He lacks the fatherly touch, and yet is really focused on the fatherly duties, in a sense. Keeping the child safe. It seems like sometimes he's torn between thinking of it as a burden and being more of almost like being harsh out of fear. Luke, you can't leave home. I can't tell you why, but you just can't. And he's trying to keep him so sheltered and so safe because he knows what's out there. You know, it's like the parent. Sheltering parents drive me nuts at times. I've got students. The town I live in is Fairburn, okay? Fairburn, Georgia. Fairburn, Georgia is relatively small. I've got students who have never been to Atlanta, which is like 15 miles up the road, ever. And that kind of sheltering kind of boggles my mind. How do you grow without seeing other places, even within your own state, even within your own metro area? But I can see where sheltering, if there is an actual threat out there, a real threat, not just a perceived one, that sheltering can be seen as a sign of love, not of a stunting growth. So I don't know. I'm torn a little bit on Owen, but I think that the adoptive families there provide a nice counterpoint and a wrap up here in dealing with, you know, the parenting where most of ours is biological we've looked at.
I think Owen is a tough love kind of dad. I mean, I think about how his father was. His father showed him a loving, caring, you know, that men can care about slaves and treat them as equals. So I think Owen has a big heart. I think that the EU especially has gone out of its way to make Owen's backstory from the prequel trilogy to what we see in the original trilogy make sense. I mean, we've had multiple minor attempts on Luke's life, enough to make him very paranoid. And, you know, the other side of it is there is the actual struggle of the moisture farm. And there is, I believe, by the time we see episode 4 and Luke's trying to go, I really think that part of that is the actual farm needing Luke, not just Owen trying to keep him still sheltered. I mean, I've got a niece that is very sheltered, and it's one of those things, too. It boggles my mind when these kids go out and they have to interact with the world and stuff, it happens, and the parents try to shelter them, and they forget about that. The sooner or later, they're going to be out there, and, you know, not always do those parents that shelter them give the kids all the tools they need. And I think Luke, in this example, is one of those prime kids that, you know, Owen kept him in the dark about so many things. That's why he was the quintessential naive farm boy.
Well, I think Owen probably knew the story of Anakin and how Shmi let him go off and see the world. I'm sure she talked about her son. And they realized that that's where, you know, at some point Anakin learned the tools that turned him into Darth Vader. And I guess he thought, maybe in his own naive way, that keeping Luke safe on the farm, he wouldn't be, I guess, tempted, not only by the dark side, but by anything else that was out there. You know, that call to adventure, it's seductive. It's very tempting, and it can lead you astray in so many number of ways. So I guess that's what he was thinking. And but the contrast to that was Beru, who is awesome because she makes blue milk. And she was so kindly and grandmotherly and such a sweet lady that I thought she offered a nice sharp contrast to Owen's curmudgeonliness, if that's a word.
Yeah, I liked Beru. She was a fun character. And, you know, and I will say that goes back again to George's picking of cast members. I mean, when those, I can't for the life of me think of the actors' names that play young Owen and Beru, but I thought they did a really good job of matching up the characters. I mean, you could see them growing. But to go back to Bail for a moment here, that's a character that in the EU side of things, they don't get to touch him. And I mean, they do, but it's one of those things, like, I always wondered why he would ever put Leia in the Senate. I mean, to me, that just seems like it just seems so against his character. And yet we know he has to do it because Lucas set her up as a senator. But it's one of those things that when I look back on what I see of the character, it just doesn't make sense to me. I really want that one explained more in a story down the road, I think.
Well, that's kind of what you were saying about, you know, how they tend to follow what their parents did. And in this sense, you know, we have Bail's a senator. Well, of course, Leia's going to wind up being a senator at some point along the way. I'm True. Much less concerned about the let's put her in the Senate, because I would think that Vader would have much less contact with the Senate directly, as Luke keeping the name Skywalker. Don't worry, it's like Smith in the Galaxy Far, Far Away. How many other Skywalkers have we seen in the Galaxy Far, Far Away not related to Luke? Oh, wait, none.
But you That's know what? We've they... seen quite a few Antilles.
This is true.
Antilles
We've had a couple Starkillers.
Yes, yes, we have. All right, so we're kind of hitting the end of our time here. Get any last thoughts, and then we'll wrap it up. Any last thoughts? Let's boil it down. Should Star Wars be looked at as an example of good parenting? How well did it handle parenting?
I would say Kelly said it the best at the beginning. Poorly. You know, I mean, granted, yeah, it might be the situational thing. You know, they're in a galaxy at war and all, but I don't know. I mean, I think that there's got to be a better way to raise some kids in a wartime era than what they've given us so far.
Well, I think I pretty much said it at the beginning. I think we can look back through history and see any number of children that actually, you know, lived and survived wartime and turned out to be just all, you know, perfectly okay, well-adjusted children and didn't become the scourge of the galaxy or anything. So I think that the parents in the Star Wars galaxy could do a much better job than they have been.
And I'm going to have to agree. I think it's one of those sagas where where we should not be taking our lessons from on parenting, because to look for the good parenting situations, you almost have to look deeper than the surface, because the ones that are featured more prominently certainly were not the best examples of parenting out there. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe the best example of parenting was C-3PO and MTD. Anyway, with that all being said,
Well, real quick, I just want to say, in the defense of the parents, though, it's the kids' choices that made them bad apples, not the parents.
This is true. This is true. That so the parents needed to teach them how to make better choices, or is it just that's a whole other thing? Is their choice? Is their destiny? Wow, that's a whole other thing. Calvinists out there are going, really? Let's have that discussion. Maybe someday.
On the list of things I plan to talk about.
Yes, yes it is. All right, folks, well, we are running out of time here. Remember, you can find our show at StarWarsReport.com, as well as on our Facebook page, iTunes, Zune, and airing on Middle Earth Network Radio. If you like the show, be sure to drop us a review on iTunes, also on the Zune Marketplace, if you like, or just fire us off an email. You can email us at beyondthefilms@StarWarsFanWorks.com. Of course, our Facebook and Twitter are both at SWBeyondFilms. Thank you very much for being back again, Kelly. I know you'll be back soon when we start talking sexism in Star Wars.
Looking forward to it.
And with that, for Star Wars Beyond the Films, I am Nathan P. Butler.
Mark Hurlman.
And Kelly.
And there's Whistler. May the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds.